What is going on, Des?
That's how we're going.
You're always looking like a stud on these calls.
Yeah.
Just can't help yourself.
Yes, Jay, what's going on?
There's training. Doing great.
Hey, Des, how are you, brother?
Good, thanks.
Richard, how are you doing, brother? Good to have you back. Don't worry if you're driving, brother. Ryan, what's going on? How we doing?
Doing good, thanks. How about you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll give everyone else a few minutes before we start chatting away. See who else is ready to show. There's any updates for us?
Ireland's better at rugby than Scotland.
This is true. We're actually
Yeah,
really good at rugby. We're actually really
you
good
are.
in our defense.
Yeah, not too much. I've been ill the last week or so. I had a rest week to get my bloods done, and then my bloods, the bloods I sent in failed. I don't know if they didn't transport very well, or they weren't taken properly, or whatever. So I've had to reorganize that. And then I was ill. I've had like, don't know if I've had COVID or something. So I've just been kind of taking it a little bit easier, just doing my daily mobility and stuff.
Were you sick when you did your bloods?
No.
Okay. Now, like, I mean, because it really messes up blood panels if people do it when they're sick, so it's kind of hard to see through the mess. So
Yeah.
that's not such a bad thing. Like, just get them done again and we'll get through them.
I think I got some results, like a little section of them, but I haven't viewed them. I'll just wait till I've got all of them and then send them over, as opposed to giving it in grabs.
Yeah, sweet. Sounds perfect. Jeff, how's it going?
Doing well, thanks. Just watching the snowfall. So we're in the midst of the storm.
Oh, nice. You're Iowa, right?
Yeah, we're at like 15, 16 centimeters so far and still coming down.
Toronto,
Well,
then.
the Canadians don't have sympathy for you.
Yeah, no, it's not
We're getting 40 tonight.
that bad.
They gotta beat you.
Greg, do you
George,
cover?
what's going on, brother?
Good morning, good afternoon, evening. How are you?
No sunshine, no snow there, I assume.
We are about 30, 32 degrees Celsius today.
That's all right. That's all
We're
right.
okay.
You get all sorts of weather in these calls. Well, there's no great update from me or Des. It's just raining. It's pretty standard.
Hey Greg, question for you.
Go ahead.
Do you find that it's very common for men who are completing panels to have to re-complete them if not done properly the first time? Like for every 10 clients that you work with, how often do you see this happen?
Rarely do they ever come back incomplete. I think the problem for Des would generally be that they will do the bloods and then they send them somewhere else. So in the UK, that's a little bit of a problem. The one that we, the Ulta Labs that we use in the US, they'll do the, I'm pretty confident they do the testing on site. So you don't tend to get that problem. The main problem that we do tend to get with people is if they do it when they're sick, because it's really hard to see through the mess of what's actually just because they're unwell and what's actually a problem. Or if you see guys, especially guys that have a bunch of muscle, if they do blood tests like the day after a heavy leg day, really hard to see through because kidney functions are all messed up, liver functions get all messed up because of it, and it can be difficult to tell if it's actually a problem. For
I remember
sure.
what happened to me with my hormones, remember?
Yeah, right. Like I've had guys like, bodybuilder style or size guys, like similar to you, Mats, right? And they'll come in, and it almost looks like you'd be confused if you'd almost think that their kidney was in failure
Yeah.
based off how their bloods work. And you're like, oof, okay, do that again. Even alcohol consumption the night before can really mess up blood tests. So it's always worth noticing. Morning, Nathaniel. What's going on, brother?
Doing well, mate. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly. Yeah, Austin made a good point there as well. Like, you got to be fasted when you do a blood test, right? You'll see triglycerides will be a little bit wild as well if people eat and then go and get their blood test done. Mr. Tulloch, what's going on, brother? Looking lean.
I'm doing good. Doing good.
I saw your photos here today. Everything looks great.
Yeah.
You and Dan are crushing it.
Well, Dan's helping a lot, and so are you. I mean, the two of you together has been a godsend to me.
Ah, Dan's all right. He's all
It's all you. It's all you, Greg.
Yeah, that's better. Thank
I
you.
was doing the calculation and John's like 99 days in, just on the verge of 100, and he's down 20 pounds. It's very impressive.
Yeah, he's crushed it,
Great
man.
job, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Ryan obviously put in just below that he had to do it for 2 days. So like avoid training 2 days beforehand. Like I have a client based out of the Lebanon and he's a big dude and he's one of the very few people that I've asked in the past to take 3 and 4 days off prior to blood testing because it really can skew, particularly liver markers and kidney markers. Yeah, that's true, Des. That can be a tricky one, right? Jeff, how we doing, brother? Seth, there's my man.
How are you, man?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
Good, good, good. Thanks.
What kind of weather have you got?
It's raining slash snowing here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Nice.
Yeah,
Okay.
good times.
Andres, how we doing, brother?
Doing good, thank you.
Nice. Okay, guys. Before we get started, I just want to call any of you guys out that have had any major challenges this week. If you want to share with the group of something that we can help you as a group, or if you've had any major wins that you want to celebrate. Like we just spoke about John losing 20 pounds in 100 days, which is amazing. On my end, I know Jeff started really well, dropped about 5 pounds in a couple of weeks. Seth's been crushing it the last while. His photos look awesome these days. Doesn't actually reflect his weight loss. I think he's only lost 13, 14 pounds, but his body composition change has been wicked. Anybody else want to celebrate anything that they've experienced in the last while? Go ahead, Jay. Just ch chuck yourself off mute.
Okay. Yeah, I know. The first time I just couldn't figure out how to get that off. Put me in a piece of heavy equipment, I'm good, but computers not so much. But yeah, so I think I did mention to you last time, but the personal trainer certification, I completed that. Just recently, maybe like a month ago, finished my corrective exercise specialist course.
Right,
So
man.
I got those things going on. Besides that, dealing with injury. So, do you remember when I seen you last? Like, my scapula was winging on the right side. So, from what it seems like to me, like I'm getting a bunch of tests done, MRI, all this type of stuff, but it almost feels like my spinal erector muscles have just been beat to crap from my job, that they're like almost like atrophying or something like that. So like it seemed like, I don't know if this sounds weird, but it seems like my upper back is going into lordosis and my lower back is going into kyphosis. And it's like,
Would you probably mean that the other way? So would you say lower back is going into
no,
lordosis?
I know it sounds weird, man, but I'm like dead serious. That's the way I'm talking about. So it's like yeah, even my neck, my cervical erectors, like my head's got pushed so far forward that these things just almost like locked up from like, so being in heavy equipment, I'm like bouncing all day like this, right? So it's like, it seems like everything on there was just holding so tight, even in my thoracic spine, that it just got so tight that my lower back started to compensate the mobility, right? You know
That's
what I mean?
interesting.
But yeah, but.
That's interesting, man. So, like, Now, this would definitely be, I'd love to be able to be more comprehensive on this.
No, I know.
Definitely more of a question for Dan or Gav.
Yeah.
They'd know an awful lot more about stuff to do there. However, like I would almost be guarantee you that they'll tell you something along the lines of that you've got to get diaphragmatic breathing back in check. So you went through some of that in Burlington, right? It's going to play a major role. It's going to play a major role. You'll be able to control your erectors and your spine.
Yeah, that was actually because that's the other thing too. I think like even when these things got tight, it my ribs were always flared forward that my diaphragm almost didn't wouldn't work properly almost, you know. But the problem is if I lay on my back on the ground, my ribs flare so far forward and my head does the same thing that it's like I almost it's extremely hard for me to get my back to lay flat on the ground. But like I'm going through tests and stuff right now still, like MRI and CAT scans and all these different things right now to kind of get a better diagnosis, I guess. But
If you struggle to maintain neutral spine when you lie on your back, so I assume when you low when you lie on your back, your neck or your head is in that position to get your head onto the floor instead of being able to tuck your chin in, and your lower back hangs up off the floor. So that's going to be definitely diaphragmatic breathing. So it's the ability to be able to one of the LDOAs that we tend to use is if you put your legs straight up against the wall while you lie on your back and you park your ass right up against the wall. And I know this is a bit of a crude way of putting it, but you've got to learn how to breathe down into your balls rather because most people will want to breathe here. You've got to learn to breathe right down through your diaphragm. And that will teach you how to flatten your spine or gain a neutral spine. It's very uncomfortable to begin with, but it's game changing. The problem with it needs volume. So you need to do it over and over and over again to repetitively retrain your breathing patterns to be able to do that. But I will get those Eldoa videos and I'll get them sent to you so you can start trying them.
Okay, yeah, I remember we did actually do them at one of the muscle camps I was at. So yeah. But yeah, even if you can send those, that'd be great. Thanks, though.
I'll make sure we figure that one out.
Okay. Thank you.
No worries, brother. Anybody else that have any problems or wins that they want to celebrate before we get started? No?
Hey Greg, it's Rob here.
Hey, Rob, what's going on, brother?
Just driving to a work meeting, so I've just got your audio only in the car. But I've been working with Andrew now for about 3 months. Dropped down below the 100 kilo mark. First, you know, consistently now, so it's at a 99, 98 kilo mark. That was a pretty big goal. So I was up probably 6 months ago. I was up about 117 kilos, heaviest I've ever been. When I started working with Andrew, I was more like the 110, 109 kilos, so down about 10 kilos. Big body composition focus for the last few months, and I've managed to maintain injury free with a bulged disc in my back. So, yeah, pretty stoked to be down under 100 kilos. That was a pretty big milestone for me.
That's a huge win, brother. Like, I mean, I know, like, obviously, you've taken off a huge chunk of that with Andrew as well, but you did a bunch of work by yourself. That's really impressive. So 17 kilos, what are we talking, like 36, 37, 38 pounds? It's huge. It's life-changing, brother. So, like, huge congratulations to you on that. And I think it's worth noting, this isn't to spoil any of the wins, right? But it's important to recognize for a lot of people out there that, like, the percentages are dramatically against us. So, like, for those guys out there, or for the vast majority of the population who lose a dramatic amount of body weight at some stage in their life, the statistics are damning. Like, it's like 95% of those people will put that weight back on. So this isn't to rain on your parade, Rob. Like, you've done an amazing job, and it's important to recognize that the stuff that got you there is generally the thing that you have to continue for an extended period of time in order to maintain that weight loss. Like, there's nothing fancy in the statistics when they look at people who maintain long-term weight loss. It's that they continue the exercises that they used initially in order to get themselves into that position. And one of the other major things, which makes a lot of sense for me, is that they continue to weigh themselves on a regular basis, right? Like, I dealt with, like, before I started working with you guys at Muscle Intelligence, I used to deal a lot more in with females. And I always noticed with females in particular, as they began to lose control of diet and, neglect their exercise regime, that they stopped weighing themselves. So they allow that weight just to accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. And eventually they finally go and they stand on the scales. They're like, I put on 20 pounds. when realistically, for people that weigh themselves regularly or at least take pictures, whatever that measurement is, they can go, do you know what? I'm 5, 6 pounds up here. Like I can catch it now, or I can allow it to snowball. So continuing along those processes, but that's awesome, Rob. Like that's really, really impressive.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, I'm just shy of 2 meters, so there's a lot of there was a lot of area to drop weight from, but also the keeper. I've dropped weight before, like you mentioned, and put it back on, and this time it just feels better. Like that, I've been doing a lot of zone 2 cardio, the exercise, the nutrition. I've starved myself and lost weight before, but this time I feel good, feel sustainable. I'm not overtraining, I'm not injuring myself, I'm not starving every day. Yeah, it feels good.
Oh no, that's awesome, brother. And I know you're in really, really good hands with Andrew, man. He can navigate those things so well. So that's amazing. Anybody else? No, we good. So I know you guys were coming on expecting to see the most amazing longevity supplement protocol that you've ever seen. You're going to be a little bit disappointed. However, I am going to take you through longevity. And what actually longevity is, because I hear this a lot of people, like, because obviously Ben speaks about it a lot, and it's obviously the game that we're in, right? Like, the vast majority of us are in this for longevity. We're in it for health. Don't get me wrong, we all want to look good, but at the end of the day, we want to live long, productive lives in whatever that is. And when most people say they want longevity, they don't actually know what it is. And you're not supposed to, right? Because it's relatively nuanced, it's relatively complex. But today I'm going to try and give you a good idea of what actually are the hallmarks of aging. So, what are the 12 things that we know for sure ages rapidly? Might be able to pick some of them out in yourself that you can see, right? So, like, if as I go through some of this stuff, you might go, do you know what? I might suffer with that particular thing. We'll talk about some of the lifestyle factors and we'll touch on diet, lifestyle factors, like I mentioned, and supplementation at the very end that has been shown. I'm also going to give a lot of my pet peeves with longevity science, right? And so many people have jumped on the bandwagon of like, I'm a longevity coach, or I'm like, people will put like, whatever their name is, and they'll put longevity coach after it. That doesn't really mean anything, right? Of course, we're all chasing health, but looking at ways that we can actually measure this to a certain extent and then actually implement anything, I think is really, really important. So let me share my screen first. Let's go. And I'll jump in and out of this presentation so that you guys can ask me as many questions as you guys need. And I'll be asking some questions from you guys as we go through this. So I know I put in longevity, what supplements can help. And there is supplements out there that can help, but there's nuance to that, like I mentioned, and there's reasons why you might want to be slightly skeptical when someone says this supplement increases longevity. When they use that term longevity by itself, that's where you have to be a little bit more skeptical. If they say this supplement helps with inflammation, or this helps, lower LDL, cool. There's probably research behind that. But when people use the term longevity, it pisses me off. Right. We'll talk about what are the mechanisms of aging. We'll touch on what hormesis is. We don't have to go through these things in dramatic detail. It's just so you guys know both what things you're trying to avoid and also why you're challenging yourself, right? So why are you doing the stuff that you're doing? Why are you training? Why are you getting in cold plunges? Why are you getting in saunas, right? We'll talk about some of the lifestyle factors, the supplements, and then we'll talk about at the very end between all of us, what are the things that we can do on a daily basis to make sure that we're living a long and healthy life to the best of our ability. Well, this will look fairly esoteric, right? Because it's ingrained in a lot of scientific jargon and research. Jargon's probably a harsh word to use, but it's involved in a lot of scientific literature, and it's difficult to explain some of these things, but I'll do my best. These are the 12 major hallmarks of aging, and you guys can look through that and you'll notice some of the things will stick out at you. You might know what chronic inflammation is, for example, or mitochondrial dysfunction. You might know what genomic instability is, being like DNA damage, right? And when you look at the primary things on the right-hand side, I'll go through them really quickly. Don't worry if you don't understand them, but noting what they are. So when we look at genomic instability, that's actually damage to our DNA. So that can happen endogenously, so inside our body can damage our DNA, or exogenously, something from the outside, like pollution, heavy metals, the food we eat, all those things can affect genomic instability. Telomere attrition. Sorry, I'm all snotty. Telomere attrition. This was one of the ones that, if any of you guys keep like any log of longevity, people who speak about it, this was the thing possibly 10 years ago they thought they'd kind of figured out what actually causes aging. So at the end of our chromosomes, we have these thing called telomeres, and they're like the plastic cap that we have at the end of our shoelaces. And every time we go through cellular replication, so every time we have to take out an old cell and put a new cell in its place, that these telomeres get shorter and shorter and shorter over time. So if we go through lots and lots of damaged cells for whatever reason, because we overeat, we don't exercise, all these things, the telomeres tend to get smaller. And they noticed that that was semi-associated with how long we lived. They did realize in time that it by itself is not a great marker, right? Then we can look at epigenetic alterations, right? So we're over here on the right-hand side. Think of epigenetics, and this is the thing. This is, I love the saying, and Charles Poliquin was a strength coach back in the day, and he used to say that bullets load the gun. I think it was his phrase. He might have stolen it from someone else. Bullets load the gun, lifestyle pulls the trigger, right? So epigenetics, think of the word epi just means on top of. So you've got your genetics that you're born with, right? These are things we can't generally change. We may be able to in the next 10, 15, 20 years, but we can't right now. And then epigenetics is your environmental exposure and how it affects those genes, right? So you might have a gene that predisposes you to cancer or cardiovascular disease. But if you live a quote unquote perfect life, you may not express those genes, if that makes sense. Okay. I won't go through these two at the bottom, loss of proteostasis and like disabled macroautophagy. You guys might hear the word autophagy around. Autophagy is just like eating oneself, right? So it's like when we have these damaged cells in the body, autophagy is our cellular or our body's defense system to take those cells out of circulation and replace them with something else. So like if we struggle to perform autophagy, normally these cells hang around when they shouldn't. And then we get into some of these. Dysregulate nutrient sensing. All you have to think about that is your ability to be able to take in food and use it appropriately. So as we get older, like our insulin gets dysregulated, our growth hormone gets dysregulated, our signaling to our brain that we're full or hungry, those things all get dysregulated. And it happens, as you'll see, and you guys probably experience at different stages in your lives, like it happens in early age if we don't look after ourselves. Okay. Now, this is one of the things that you guys will actually notice is mitochondrial dysfunction. Now, people have asked me, like, is there tests that we can do for mitochondrial function? There is, and there's other tests that we can do that are kind of adjuncts to mitochondrial function that we can use. But you guys might recognize that in fatigue. So generalized fatigue will always have the mitochondria as a central mechanism. So when like, and it have like, I've experienced this at different stages in my life. I'm sure you all have, with lack of sleep or whatever it might look like. But mitochondria are responsible for the energy production in our body. Taking you guys back to high school biology, right? They produce ATP. That's the energy currency of the body. So we notice in a lot of circumstances when people feel fatigued, at a central mechanism, there's mitochondrial dysfunction. Now, the reasons for that can be quite varied, but like we know that aerobic capacity, so like your ability to be able to do cardio effectively, dramatically affects mitochondrial function, and your ability to be able to get oxygen to the cell so that we can produce ATP effectively. So I would argue that mitochondrial dysfunction sits at the center of almost all disease. It all seems to have some sort of role to play. in how we express disease. So energy dictates everything, is a saying by Chris Masterjohn, who's a really interesting nutrition scientist. And I'd say he's probably right. When we get into cellular senescence, this is where our cells become like zombie cells. This should happen naturally. So when cells become dysfunctional, they should signal to the rest of the body to come and take them away. But when we lose autophagy, our ability to be able to eat ourselves to replace it, we get senescent cells. Senescent cells become like zombie cells where eventually they will go through death, but it's not programmed death. It's called necrosis, right? So it's like it's not the body going, okay, this thing is damaged, let's remove it. It will just almost explode or implode, and it'll leak out all its innards and affect all the cells around it. So they call them zombie cells. Senescence is strongly associated with stuff like cancer, where you see that cells become that dysfunctional that they end up mutating and becoming stuff like cancer cells, right? I won't go through stem cells and altered intracellular communication, but chronic inflammation and dysbiosis, some of you guys might know, right? Like the inability to be able to recover from an injury would generally be associated as chronic inflammation. Cardiovascular disease has associations in chronic inflammation. If you have a pathogen or an infection that you can't get rid of, will cause chronic inflammation. And then dysbiosis, which is gut dysfunction, right? So I know that's a lot, and we're not going to touch on how we can affect all of these things, but we're going to touch on the stuff that we know for a fact affects longevity. And the supplements that I'll touch on later are called like pleiotropic supplements. So they'll target all of these things, or at least the vast majority of them. Now, can anybody tell me what's the difference between health span and lifespan? It's just an important, although not too different, and you could probably use them interchangeably. I think it's important to reference the difference. So if you guys can just chuck in the chat, what's the difference between health span and lifespan? There we go. Length of life versus quality. So lifespan refers to the total number of years a person lives. I love that. So we can thank you, ChatGPT. Well done. And it's very true, right? So lifespan refers to, so look at what Andres put in. Lifespan refers to the total number of years a person lives. Right? So it's chronological. So lifespan is not a predictor of necessarily health span. But his health span is how long we live free of chronic disease or disability. I think that's spot on. Thank you, ChatGPT. It's also quite scary how good it is. So we are all pursuing health span. I don't know about you, but I don't want to live to 50 and be sick till I'm 80. Which is what we see in a lot of the population now. Although lifespan is expanding and Western medicine has done some really cool stuff in terms of extending how long we live. But when we look at 70-year-olds that are around now, I don't want to be like that when I'm 70. And like Austin put in there, play with your kids or sports till you're 70, right? Bedridden or deal with health problems. Yeah. So I want to live till I'm 80. And then I want to die under a deadlift, right? I just want my heart to go kaboom while I'm still lifting twice body weight and live healthy up to that age, whatever that may be. I don't want to spend an extended period of time of my life trying to claw back health that I've lost, right? And I always think, and it's a phrase that I like to use sometimes, don't ever put your health in the hands of a doctor. And that's not to say avoid doctors. You go there when you're sick. But I think about it like, don't get to the stage of ill health where you have to hand over your own health to somebody else. We have enough information out there now where we can take control of the vast majority of things, right? Like, don't get me wrong, if you have a chronic illness, you need to deal with a doctor, but I don't want to pass that over to somebody. I want to be in control of mine. Now, this is why I hate geroscience or longevity medicine. The vast majority of the fucking studies are done in rats, C. elegans, or worms, right? And then people extrapolate this research and they go, well, this worked for a C. elegans, therefore it works for humans. That's not how it works. We are completely different. And in fact, the vast majority of animal studies do not transfer over to humans well. So when people quote human study or quote animal studies all the time, I kind of get a little bit, I kind of get a little bit put off by whatever their message is. Now, it's not to say that we can't use animal studies to prompt what we're going to do going forward, right? Because we have to start somewhere. But the fact that C. elegans respond really well to caloric restriction does not indicate to humans that we have to spend our entire lives in caloric restriction. We'll touch on that a little bit later, though. So I hate geroscience. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate when people quote it all the time because there's so many limitations. And one of the major limitations is we're never going to take a child from birth to death and examine their entire lifespan. First of all, it would cost an absolute fortune. You'd have huge fallout of the people that are actually in it. So compliance would be extremely difficult. And you'd have to pass that research on from research group to research group throughout that person's lifespan just to get results. Okay? So that's my little bitch and moan. Now, what do we actually know actually, before that, I'm going to ask you guys, what factors do you think majorly influence our abilities to live into old age? And it doesn't have to be objective things that you mentioned. So it doesn't have to be body weight. Obviously, that's a thing. It doesn't have to be body weight. It can be some of the more subjective things, right? Like family. Does that actually lead for us to live longer and healthy lives? So I'd be really interested to know what you guys think. Sleep, yeah, Austin. Relationships, yeah, VO2 max, emotional state, gratitude, social connections, connections to sense of purpose. Well done, hand strength. However, some of this I love, right? Like inner peace. So some of the more subjective things are actually surprisingly, I have surprising amounts of evidence in the research. Right. So, although, like, I'm going to go through a lot of the stuff, like, I know everyone wants to know the supplement protocol, but there's a lot of other things. And, like, Ryan Huggins put a reason to live. I'm going to come back to that one because that's actually a good way of putting it. So, these are some of the stuff that seem to dictate our lifestyle factors that seem to influence whether we'll live a long life. This is the stuff that we definitely know. Right. So, not like this, uridine is the thing now, and it annoys me slightly. I'm not going to rant. That's been shown to affect autophagy, right? So will that affect lifespan? Maybe, right? Or health span, I should say. Maybe. But these are the things that we definitely know. VO2 max, muscle mass, body mass index, diet, tobacco, alcohol use, environmental toxins, polypharmacy. And this is where I spoke about briefly in terms of not handing your health over to a doctor, not getting to such ill health that a doctor's influence is solely needed in order to solve it. Because polypharmacy is a huge predictor of death. And polypharmacy is just the use of multiple different medications, right? When people end up in polypharmacy and they're using three, four, five, six different drugs to control a load of metabolic problems, you can almost predict lifespan or health span in that kind of circumstance, right? So that's important to note, right? So what can we really control? Well, VO2 max and muscle mass, right? They're the real predictors of longevity that we know physically. And I'm not going to touch on them too much in detail here because some of the guys who are better versed in those than I am, whether that's Steve, Chris, Dan, or Gav, will go through that at some stage again this month. But just worth noting, diet we'll touch on a little bit because it's a little bit more nuanced. Environmental toxins, man, like these do seem to play a major role in how long our, and on our health span. And we'll touch on them a little bit. I don't like people to get bogged down too much in environmental toxins because it's something that we're never going to completely avoid. However, there are certain measurements that or measures that we can take to make sure that we don't deal with a whole bunch of it. And then social relationships, excuse me, and sense of purpose. Surprisingly, how big of a role those things play. And that's why I was a little bit surprised that a lot of you guys put in a lot of that stuff more so, but it actually does play a huge role. And we'll touch on it a little bit. I just wanted to mention this briefly. I don't want to go through it in too much detail, but it's like the kid in the bubble idea, right? So if you took a child from birth and just put them in a bubble and gave them the exact nutrients they needed, would they live a long life? And the answer is no, because they will never experience a hormetic effect. Hormesis is a stressor that we put on the body that we allow it to, or that we adapt to, and it makes us more resilient in some way, right? So whether we get exposed to stress, I love Ben made this thing, made this quote before, and it kind of hit me hard. Like when you guys were kids, a long time ago for some of us, making the bed was stressful, right? Your mother would have to tell you 10 times to do it. My wife still has to tell me to do it, but that is what it is. And now a lot of you guys have the burden, the stress of a house, a wife, children, mortgage, bills, whatever it may be, based on political issues, whatever it is, we have all these problems that we can now put on our shoulders and carry. Right? That's because we've been exposed to hormesis gradually throughout our lives. So a little bit more stress, a little bit more stress, a little bit more stress. And that's important for you guys to recognize wherever you are in this phase of becoming super healthy, already super healthy, and trying to get that little bit extra. The hormetic effect is so important in whatever way that is, and finding where your resiliency may be a little bit low. So there's loads and loads and loads of different leave it unmade. I'm going to copy that. So there's loads and loads of different resiliencies that we may have less of, right? Like there's immune resiliency, there's cold resiliency, there's hot resiliency, stress, physical, psychological resiliency, all these things that we can note within ourselves that we may not be particularly resilient to. And sometimes recognizing them and knowing what they are and trying to affect them can be really important. Like if you're really bad at cold exposure, like cold shock proteins have been shown to protect DNA. They've been shown to help with autophagy. So like if you're really bad at dealing with the cold, small exposures to that thing can be beneficial over time. Now, if you find that you're freezing in the middle of summer, getting in an ice bath probably is not the right thing to do, right? But hormetic effects allows us, the hormetic response to stressors allows us to live long, healthy lives as long as it's the right amount. As you can see here, if we go too far with the hormetic response, we get increased cell damage. Not what we're looking for. Just worth knowing. And then, like I said, I mentioned VO2 max. VO2 max is something that I want you guys, I want all of us, because it's such a major predictor of health span, that I want you guys not to be elite for your age, but to be elite for someone 10 years younger than you. That's the goal, right? Because when you achieve really peak VO2 max at whatever stage you are in your life, we'll always have drop off as we get older, but the higher we can create it initially, obviously that drop off will be a lot less significant as we get older. And muscle mass. Clearly, we know it. Physical inactivity, people lose 3 to 5% of their muscle per decade. So you're like, within 40 years, by the time you're 60, you've lost 20% of your muscle mass. You probably didn't have much muscle at 20 anyway. And this becomes a major issue. And it's like, even take out smoke. Like, I mean, even you look at factors such as metabolic syndrome, physical activity, and smoking is predictive of longevity. This, even regardless of those things. Now, what do you guys think is the best diet for longevity? Or have you heard of a diet that is best for longevity? And this is something that actually we discussed on our coaching call last week, where we were kind of debating what the best diet is overall. So I'll give you my answer. But you guys give me a general idea of what you think might be the most beneficial diet to help us live the longest. Nice, right? One that is sustainable. One that is sustainable for a lifetime. Anybody else? Ah, so someone put in something interesting there. So Austin mentioned, I visited the city with the most people over 100 in the world. They ate meat, white rice, and a shitload of tea. So I also like depends on the person, right? Mediterranean blue zone. So this brings us back to the blue zone argument. When people always extrapolate from the blue zone, they go, therefore, those people in the blue zones around the world live the longest. Therefore, their diet must be the most effective. It doesn't seem to be necessarily true because when you travel around the blue zones, it's dramatically different, probably based off their genetics. But like you have some places that have particularly high fat, some places have lower fat, some people use a lot of oil, some people drink alcohol, some people don't, some people are vegetarian, some people aren't. So blue zone isn't a great predictor of a diet for longevity. One thing you can see throughout all of those places, though, is that they eat whole food. So I think like this is where the argument comes in about caloric restriction. Do we have to be in a caloric restriction for our entire lives? It's like, no, we don't, right? As humans, it's slightly different. As humans, it's slightly different. I think what someone said there is something that's sustainable for life that has a lot of fiber, a reasonable high amount of protein, and balanced fats. I think is probably going to be the most beneficial diet for the vast majority of people. But there is genetic considerations here because you go to certain parts of the world and they tend to be more responsive to certain macronutrients than others. Now, it's finding what's most sustainable for you. But caloric restriction in of itself, like that you'll see in geroscience, doesn't seem to be the case for humans because we need muscle mass. Okay? So it's perfect. There is no perfect diet. Whole food seems to be the major thing. When we get into environmental toxins, this is something I don't want people to go insane about because, like I said, we can't avoid it. But do you guys do anything in particular to try and avoid environmental toxins? So whether that's pesticides, herbicides, pollution, or any airborne toxins. Do you guys implement anything? Because I can give you a little bit of advice about some of the more beneficial things that you can do. But hearing what you guys do also helps. Water, filtered water, right? So these are the things that I would give the vast. So BPAs, nice. Organic food, nice. Okay, so correct. So avoiding pesticides in food is something that we can normally have pretty good control over. Yes, organic food. One thing that we can avoid is plastics as much as possible. So particularly not eating or not heating up plastic. So, Tupperware, for example, so lunch boxes, putting food in and putting in the microwave. Also drinking through plastic at the top of coffee cups is a major way that we can increase BPA. So like when you go to Starbucks and you get the drive-through, right? That's a major way to avoid it. Another way that we can do it is putting HEPA filters in the room that we spend the most time in. So filtering the air in like our bedroom or our office can be a particular benefit. I don't go running around pulling up my carpets, or I always loved the story that someone told me of going into the urinal. The little thing in the corner that kind of spits out a little bit of fragrance, I assume, in most male toilets. That's got a lot of environmental toxins in it. But trying to piss so quickly as to avoid that is slightly overkill. I don't want to become obsessive like that because that stress in of itself probably isn't good for us. But looking at environmental toxins, I think, is a real beneficial way to increase health span. This always hits home. I've mentioned this on loads of our talks before, but people spoke about like what's the best things that we can influence subjectively. Social relationships are huge, and it's the perception, right? That's the most important thing. You can have a million people around you and still feel lonely. So finding communities, whether it's something like muscle intelligence, where you feel like you're connected to other people, you're interested in the same things, and people that you speak to give you something back, this stimulating conversation, I think is super important. But I wonder, would you guys be able to answer this? So what's one thing that trumps loneliness? And some of you mentioned it in the chat earlier. So there is one thing that even if you're alone, can negate some of the effects. Thank you. Purpose, right? And it's not something, this is more of a Ben conversation, right? But there's quite strong research on this. And men who have a sense of purpose seem to live longer. Lower depression, lower sleep problems, better psychosocial outcomes, and better health behaviors, right? So purpose is huge. And I can't tell you how to find your purpose. But I think looking and trying to find out, I know John, I know Ben mentions a lot, Dr. John DeMartini does a course on it, which is beneficial. But purpose is big, man. So don't negate the slightly more esoteric or subjective things that might help with you living a long, healthy life. And that's one of the actually forgot to mention, that's one of the major things that they notice around blue zone areas is they have social connection and they have purpose later in life. So, what supplements do you need? This is the perfect supplement plan so that you'll live to 100. So, there it is. Now, when you look at this, right, this is when you look at through most of the research and you'll find all these certain supplements that seem to come up over and over again. And all the hallmarks of aging, these supplements seem to have a positive effect on. So you might have heard of some of these, you may not have heard of some of these, and that's fine. But what you'll find throughout most of them is most of them are anti-inflammatory and most of them are antioxidant, right? The dominant ones that seem to come up the most being curcumin or resveratrol seem to just pop up over and over and over again. Resveratrol, which you may notice in some of the blue zones, they tend to drink a lot of red wine. Resveratrol comes from that. It seems to be, you see the effects of like green tea, quercetin, which can help with mast cells, N-acetylcysteine, which can help with glutathione, all those things. And this would probably be the one that I would use. Now, do I use it? No. This would cost me about $500 a month to follow the higher dose of this. But I do rotate through these supplements from time to time. So I'll pick one or two of them. I try to aim for the higher dose if I can, and I'll pick one or two of them and rotate through them. Will you notice a change in how you feel? Maybe. And this is kind of the long game that you're playing. Like, we don't know yet if these will massively influence your health span, but I'd be willing to spend a couple of hundred bucks every single month to take the risk with them. And I'd love to ask you guys, what have you heard out there? Because I'm going to go through some of the like the newer kids on the block. What have you guys heard that has been helpful for longevity in terms of supplementation? I'll wait. Aha, it pops up. Also, methyl guard, so methylation, yeah, right. So I'll come back to that. With methylation, that's more based around like genetic issues, so that'll be like B12 folate, trimethylglycine, those kind of things. So if you have SNPs and methylation, they could be beneficial for your health span. BPC 157, maybe, right? So I did not go through peptides here, and I think I'll keep that for another day. But like, there are some stuff that seems to help, like they seem to think will help with peptides and longevity. What are they called? That's going to annoy me. Not directly peptides, but they're like small molecular peptides. Dr. Cavinson out of Russia came out with a lot of them, bioregulators that seem to have effects. Like there was one, and it's going to really annoy me, the name of it, that seemed to really help with macular regeneration. So people who were half blind, they took this peptide and it brought back a lot of their sight. So like some really interesting stuff out there in peptides, but I didn't touch on it on this one. It would just take too long. So some of the newer kids on the block, like alpha-ketoglutarate, spermidine, uridine A, butyrate, NMN, or niacin, and apigenin. And I think NMN, you'll see a lot. Like you said, someone said it's blowing up their feed. NMN, nicotinamide riboside. That's nicotinamide mononucleotide, but they're recyclers of NAD. NAD is something that's responsible for creating energy in our mitochondria, and it seems to drop dramatically as we age. So maybe the use of some of these nutrients might be helpful. So definitely worth noting. And there's also like there's a peptide called 5-amino-1-MQ. I imagine within the next while it's going to be used in a lot of longevity clinics and stuff like that because it's really effective at helping recycle NAD, probably more than NMN is. So that's a really interesting one. I've tried 5-amino-1-MQ, and it's one of the very few supplements or peptides where I've noticed a noticeable change in my energy with it. Right, so questions. Enough of me talking. I'd love to know any questions you guys have, either what I've just presented or things that you might be more curious about when it comes to longevity, if I can answer it. I can't answer it all. You want to just shout out? No. So outside of longevity, have we got any questions overall about nutrition, training, anything that you guys would like to go through?
Hey, Greg, and you and I've talked a little bit about this, but just on longevity, right? All of us, I just joined Facebook. I've put it off for 15 years, and now I'm on Instagram. And I think because I'm a 50-year-old white guy with, whatever, I get hit by my whole feed is either hot chicks or people trying to sell me something. Right? Some amino acids, something, you got Breca and all these guys. Like, how do you cipher through the shit?
It's a wicked question. It's a really good question. I would normally say, and I can only speak for nutrition, really. I think it's fairly consistent with training, though, as well, is people who speak in absolutes. So people who say, this thing definitely does that, or my plan works for you, I'd be really skeptical of. Because they don't take into consideration the idiosyncrasies of different people. So people who speak in absolutes, definitely you need to be wary of. And I know you sent me on the thing by that gentleman the other day. Anybody in a top hat who's telling you about lifestyle, avoid. But even the likes of, so like you look at someone like Gary Brecka is a really good example of this, right? Gary Brecka does the 10x genetic testing, and his testing isn't bad. It genuinely isn't but it only tests 10 genes. And we could literally test for 300 of them for less of the price. But I think with him, and what annoys me about what he does is he'll go, you have these genetic SNPs, therefore you must take these supplements. That's not true. If you have genetic SNPs, we have to see what the epigenetic effect of that is. So he'll test for methylation, right? Methylation is this process that affects DNA, but it also creates a creatine or phosphatidylcholine. It affects neurotransmitters and all these other things. But like we can check in blood tests if this is defective in real time. So the fact that he will say, because of this gene, therefore you have to take this really high B12 is short-sighted, is either ignorant or to a certain higher extent dishonest. Possibly pushing on criminal to a certain extent. Also, don't listen to Dave Asprey. I semi-agree with that, or I mostly agree with it. So yeah, just people who talk in absolutes or people who make big, broad statements about the effect of something on everybody. So Jeff put in the realm of diet with an eye towards heart disease and cardiovascular, is any advantage or disadvantage to specific diet regimens? Right. So generally speaking, I don't think a particularly low cholesterol diet has any, for the most part, doesn't have any particular benefit unless somebody's already had a cardiovascular event. I know we discussed that before. Lower glycemic or lower carbohydrate, I should say, diet seems to be slightly more beneficial. And balance of fat seems to play a major role in terms of macronutrient makeup. So you'll notice that in a lot of people, particularly in a Western diet, omega-3 to omega-6 ratio is dramatically off. So you'll see that we have a really high dominance of omega-6 and a very low level of omega-3. So I think balance there is really, really key. And then I think trying to find, I know we did it with you, trying to find anything within someone's blood test that may be off that will determine cardiovascular risk. So yeah, a bit vague, but I hope that helped. What's your favorite way to hit protein macros if you're maxed out on all other macros and are tired of shakes, protein, and eggs? I use beef jerky generally if I'm struggling to hit a protein target and I want to keep something that's relatively low. Says he's an authority in longevity, but it looks like he's 20 years in the past. So Dave Asprey, does anybody know who Dave Asprey is? No, some people will. Like, they'll see him out there and he is the worst. So just be very careful with him if you do come across him. The worst for cherry picking research. Like, some of the worst stuff I've ever seen, where he's like, he had one out recently. Some of you guys might have seen it, where he's like, oh, they gave one group of kids oatmeal and they gave other kids an omelet. And the kids who had oatmeal later on in the day had much more hunger. Right. But he failed to mention that the kid who got the omelet also got an extra 500 calories or something within that meal. So he's very deceptive. So be very wary of Dave Asprey. I would be anyway. Has anybody else got any questions before we wrap up? Go ahead, Jay.
Okay, so I guess it has to do with VO2 max, or like I guess training mitochondria, is like cardio training or VO2 max, the only way to train mitochondria, or is there other things we could do?
Direct. No, so like, don't get me wrong. Like, weight training in its capacity will affect mitochondrial function, just not to the same level. So what you'll find with aerobic work, it will massively increase, first of all, the function of the mitochondria. So it'll help you actually get oxygen there to produce energy. It'll also increase the biogenesis. So it'll increase the amount of mitochondria. So I would say for what we
Okay.
moment, it's the most effective way in order to do so. So it doesn't mean you have to do dramatic and excessive amounts of aerobic work forever, but getting an aerobic base, I think, is really, really important for everybody. And then starting to move up the intensity of that work in order to increase VO2 max as well.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. We good,
Excuse me,
James?
it sound
Anything?
like a Greg, sound
Oh,
like a
go
newbie question. VO2 max, since we're on that, what's the best way to get a baseline and to track that you guys go through?
So you can, there's a few different ways. You can either go somewhere and wear the mask and do all the fancy stuff. We use, which I haven't done with you yet because you do a lot of the training with, you have like partners training with your wife every other day. But we can do it either 2000 meter row seems to be a good adjunct, or like a different measurement of VO2 max, right? So we just measure distance on a 2000 meter row. We also use a mass test, which is like we'll get RPM on a bike or a rower, and we'll get you to go for 5 minutes as fast as you can on that bike or rower. And we'll get your average RPM for that time. And that can, they're like kind of proxy markers of VO2 max. And then we put in modalities to try and increase those.
Got it.
You can go online. Concept Rower has a list online of how far, like, elite people get on the 2,000 meter row for your age group, and then you can test it, or we can test it.
Cool. Thanks.
No probs. We good, gents? All right, boys. Jay,
Cheers.
you wanted to hang around and ask a few questions, didn't you? Matt's mention.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no
Cheers.
probs.
Thanks, Craig. See you, man.
Thanks, guys. See y'all soon.
So yeah, it's pretty much just I kind of touched on it a little bit, was about that injury thing. So like I was saying, it feels like it literally like almost feels like my erector muscles are almost like turning to jello, man. Like it's like it might sound weird or something, but yeah, it's like but yeah, so like I initially messaged Maddie and asked him like, so if a muscle can a muscle atrophy so bad that it can't rebuild itself type thing, or
Not at your age. Bone
no,
can. Bone
bone
can.
can,
Yeah.
yeah.
Muscle at your age won't, unless you have like a degenerative disease, right? Which you don't have.
Yeah.
But bone can. But it doesn't mean that, like, if you find out that you have degeneration in, like, say, your lumbar spine or your cervical spine, it doesn't mean you can't build the architecture around that so it does so that it's not an issue ongoing, right? So if like the fact that you are getting a lot of issues, like you say, when you lie on your back and you've got that head, like that forward head posture and all those kind of things, they're rectifiable, brother, genuinely.
Yeah,
Like,
because so
sorry, go
yeah,
ahead.
the thing, so yeah, with some of the tests that I got done, so I ended up, and I think this happened, maybe it might have been happening when I seen you last, but it's like I got some X-rays done after I seen you. So I have degenerative disc disease bilateral in C5, 6, and 7, and then 17-degree Cobb's angle curvature in my T12, so like to the side, it's like shifted to the side. But from what it seems to me is obviously that's coming from the muscles were just not supporting. So like building the muscles back up is probably the best idea, right? I would think.
Yeah, so but yeah, absolutely. But you have to gain control first of your spine. So like you have to be able to get your spine into a neutral position, like when you walk. So you need to get rid of like, and not just saying to somebody stand up, right? Because that doesn't
No.
emphasize the point. It's reinforcing it with breath work, because that will allow you to be able to get rid of the either the lordosis in lower spine or kyphosis in the middle. So, because when you can do, because it doesn't matter, like if you're constantly in that position and you're kyphotic, you're not going to be able to activate like your lower trap muscles. You're not going to be able to use your glutes effectively. You're not going to be able to use your pec effectively. And your shoulder blades are going to be really disjointed and not work properly. So, it's definitely the first place for you to start. And it's just trying to reinforce that. Are you at any stage, are you thinking you'll be able to get out of, I'm sure like you're obviously going into PTing. Are you getting off heavy machinery anytime soon?
Yeah. So, like, my doctor already told me to not continue with that job. I actually filed a claim because it happened at work for like workman's comp, but because it's a chronic issue, they denied the claim. So now I have a lawyer that's going to appeal it and all this stuff. But so yeah, I'm like transitioning. Obviously, it's hard to find another job when that's all I've done for most of my career. So yeah, I'm transitioning into something else. The personal trainer thing, obviously, I want to wait until I fix myself. And then, obviously, it's going to be hard to train people if I can't do the exercises myself, even, right? So,
Well,
my
you can do
idea
the
is to.
you could demonstrate the exercises now, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so bad that, like, it's like the saying distal stability creates, or proximal stability creates distal mobility. It's almost like the opposite to me is like this. Like my core is so weak, like the erectors mostly, that everything else is thrown off. Like my scapulas are like it's to the point where I can't even do like a normal bicep curl correctly. Because that's what I was saying. Like it feels like the spinal erectors are just so tough, so much wear and tear that they're just beat to crap, that they're almost like kind of like a jello-y kind of feeling now. Like they're definitely not stable enough that it's thrown off all my limbs. Like even if I like try to do like a single legged lunge or something, like my hips are all shifted sideways. It to the point of like even like this, like when I walk. If I turn left, if I'm just walking down the street and I turn left, it feels like this, like my body is turning, my upper body's turning, and my lower body is like 2 steps behind my upper body. It's like, yeah, it's like not moving correctly. But so I got an MRI done. That went to my doctor. I gotta go back. They want to do a CAT scan, something about protein buildup they found near my skull. I don't know if that has to do with any of this stuff, but yeah, just literally like I like everything else is thrown off because of the erectors. So it's like this: if I lay face down on the ground and I try to just do back extensions, I cannot. I used to be able to feel my erectors engage. Now it's like I can literally feel like maybe 5% engaged compared to what I used to feel, say 100%. So like if even if I did at the gym, I was trying to do back extensions on the machine, but what would happen is as soon as I would get halfway up, my body would shift sideways. So it's like I couldn't even do it, stabilize myself enough to do it on the machine. So if I'm on the ground, even when I'm on the ground, it my chest, that arching position of my chest, it even does that when I'm on the ground. It's like the erectors are just not strong enough, man.
Do you
So,
is it you remember how far are you from Pure Gym, Pure Muscle?
probably like maybe like an hour away or something.
Do you remember the manual therapist, the physical therapist that came onto our course for a little bit? The bald guy has alopecia, like so he was proper, like completely no hair.
Yeah, the bigger guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember him, yeah.
He would be definitely worth going to see.
Yeah.
So he
Okay.
is super smart and super clued on in terms of activation work as well. Like it's definitely going to be breath work. So doing that Eldola
Yeah.
work is automatically going to help. But he's going to be able to pick apart a little bit better what actually is going on at like site level.
Yeah.
So I would definitely start with the Eldola stuff, and I'll get them to send you those videos. But I'd reach out to him, brother, because he'd be able to help you.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Yeah, because I even thought to myself, I've tried to take videos of it and kind of so I could show somebody over a video what's happening, but the videos do no justice at all what's really happening, you know? So yeah, to see someone in person would definitely help, right? So
What the fuck is his name again?
I know I remember what he looks like. I forget his name, but yeah, I remember what he looks like. So I'm sure if I see him, right?
No, but because I have his number.
Okay.
I'll message Ben tonight and I'll ask him what his name is. I'll message him and see if he's taken anybody on, then I'll pass his number on to you.
Yeah, and then the other thing too is like I might not even be able to go see him right now because, like I said, I've been off of work for like over a year now. So like even right now, finances are kind of tight right now. So it's like, you know what I mean? But as soon as I can, definitely, you know? Yeah.
But I would definitely start with the breath work, man. Like, because regaining control of your core is going to be really, really important to take some of the stress. Either it's because like your lower back is super bunged up and tight, or if it's gone super weak. Now, what would be of benefit as well because this stuff is a little bit out of my scope, right? Like I'm not great with biomechanics, and I claim to be. I'll get one of the other guys to reach out to you as well, who might know a little bit more about this.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that.
That's all right, brother.
Yeah.
I'll message Dan tomorrow. I have you on Facebook. I'll message you as soon as we're off, and I'll give you my number. So if you message me on WhatsApp, Then I can pass your number on to him so that he can start asking you a few questions as well.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna have to. I don't even have WhatsApp, but I guess I can figure it out. I'll get it on my phone and then.
You're on Instagram,
Sorry. Instagram, yeah.
Okay, I'll
Okay.
send you your profile on Instagram.
Okay, perfect.
All right, brother.
Okay, thanks a lot, Greg.
No problem. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay.
Bye, Jay.